Thank you, Prem. Thank you, Ganesh. And dear listeners, Sai Ram from Prashantanilayam, the most happening, the most interesting, the most inspiring place on the planet. And I say this because this place never ceases to surprise you. When Bhagwan was there in the physical form, his uncertainty always baffled you. You were always left thrilled because you did not know when he was going to come. You did not know how long he would stay in the mandir. You did not know which way his car would turn. You don't know when his car could come. You don't know where suddenly he could drive off. And you did not know whom he is going to bless and how he is going to bless, what he is going to do today, what is he going to materialize today, how is he going to pick up someone and talk to him or her today. You know, every moment was spent in this eager anticipation and joy. In fact, one of the reasons why I decided to stay back in Prashantanilayam after my post-graduation was this, to relish and bask in the bliss of this cosmic uncertainty. And today, I'm happy to tell you that even today, this uncertainty is still there. It is still alive, and it is exciting to be in Prashantanilayam because every day is as baffling and as thrilling as before. Just that it happens in different ways. And if we are open to him, and if we are open to him working through us every day, then every day is a magical journey. Every day is a wonderful unfolding of his love. Just yesterday, February 4th, 2015, I had the chance to meet one Mr. Paul Bryden from Australia. Do you know who he is? He's a former Australian boomerang throwing champion. He won his first Australian boomerang championship title in 1983 and subsequently he won 6 more Australian championships. He represented Australia twice internationally. In fact, he has thrown and taught people how to throw boomerang all over the world, from Chile, Argentina, Brazil, France, Germany, England, Netherlands, USA, Canada, South Korea, Thailand, India, Japan, New Zealand, Australia, you name it. But the most interesting thing is, when he came to Prashantanilayam for the first time in 1993, he had the opportunity to be with Swami, with a few others from England who had come to Prashantanilayam to do a film on the super speciality hospital, and he was part of that team. And the first time he had audience with Bhagwan, it was in the Purnachandra Auditorium, where Swami was having a session with the college and school students. And on that occasion, when he showed his boomerangs to Swami, Swami gave him the opportunity to actually throw the boomerang in the Purnachandra Auditorium. Now, for those who are unaware, boomerang is a throwing tool. Basically, it is constructed as a flat aerofoil that is designed to spin about an axis perpendicular to the direction of its flight. And a returning boomerang is designed to return to the thrower. In fact, the term boomerang is now part of English lexicon because of this unique property of a boomerang coming back to you. It was, of course, a well-known weapon used by the indigenous Australians for hunting. Historically, it has been used for hunting, but in the recent times, it has been used for sport and entertainment. It is commonly thought of as an Australian icon. So, this person, Mr. Paul Bryden, had this opportunity to demonstrate his boomerang to Swami in the Purnachandra Auditorium, and Swami was so interested seeing what he did and looking at the boomerang that he asked the students, how many of you want to learn the sport? And so many raised their hands, and Swami was so happy seeing so many hands raised. And you know what happened next year? In the forthcoming sports meet in January 1994, during the inaugural function of the annual sports and cultural meet, boomerang was one of the items. So many students performed the sport in front of Bhagwan, letting go this tiny wooden instrument powerfully, which comes back so faithfully, so beautifully. And yesterday, as I was talking to him, he was sharing all these stories, many wonderful tales. But what touched me the most is not what he has done to take the sport to several countries, or even his deep research into the boomerang heritage, because he's been constantly meeting and interacting with the Aboriginals in Australia and finding out more about the heritage of the sport and the nuances of this beautiful instrument, how it functions and all that. Every little detail that he finds out and he has found out is very fascinating. It's very inspiring. It's very enriching for this generation to know. But even as all this is very interesting, what is most touching for me is not what he has done to take boomerang to so many people all over the world. What is most touching for me is what the boomerang has done to him. And he told me that the boomerang has taught him gratitude. Every time he throws it in the air, he said, it is like giving out gratitude to the world. And for him, Swami is the universe. For him, universe and Swami are synonymous. So for him, every time he throws the boomerang, it is like an act of gratitude. And when you give it properly, when you throw the boomerang properly, it will come back to you beautifully. And he says, once you learn to give it properly, give out gratitude, it will come back to you so amazingly. You will only be left dazed with joy. And he says that is the greatest lesson that boomerang has taught him. And when you think of it, isn't this one of the primal philosophies of life which will always keep us grounded and happy, which will always keep us blessed, not stressed? They say, if you live simply, walk humbly, love genuinely, all the good will come back to you. If you live simply, walk humbly and love genuinely, all the good will come back to us. In the same hour, last Thursday, the previous episode of Outside, Inside, Deep Inside, I played for you the first part of a conversation with Professor Sudhir Bhaskar. I called it Learning with Love, Anecdotes and Insights from the Experiences of Professor Sudhir Bhaskar. And in this episode, Professor Bhaskar narrated one powerful incident from his life which taught him precisely this lesson. This lesson that a simple boomerang teaches us all the time. Just to recap, Professor Sudhir Bhaskar mentioned how in 1977, when he was working in Vadodara in Gujarat, he came to Puttaparthi for the first time for Shivratri, and he had the opportunity of witnessing the Lingodbhavam, Bhagwan bringing out the Lingam from his own being. And it was so thrilling an experience for him that he decided he will come back to Prashantilayam every year for this festival. And then eventually, that's how he got introduced to Bhagwan. And eventually he became a Sevadal. And as a Sevadal in the state of Gujarat, he used to go every Sunday to a general hospital called Maharaja Saije General Hospital. And they used to do service in the orthopedic ward. And he says, one Sunday he saw a young person, probably in his 20s, admitted in the ward. And he was accompanied by his brother and sister-in-law. And then he wanted to find out more about this young person. And then he learned that one of his legs, unfortunately, has been amputated. What had happened was one day as he was going along in the road, he slipped, and as ill luck would have it, his leg went under a tractor. And that is how this tragedy had happened. And since they were from a small village and they could not get any immediate medical help, so the local hospital there advised amputation of his like to save his life, and that is what they did. But the local hospital could not manage to do a good post-operative care. There was very high risk of infection, and that is how they had landed up in this general hospital, where Professor Sudhir Bhaskar, along with other Sevadal members, were going to do seva. And this person, when he met him the next week, second week, as he was talking to him, this young person was very depressed. You know, he had all these questions of why me, what have I done, I have not done any harm to anyone, and how could this happen to me? And there was all these questions, and he was very depressed. And they tried to pacify him, they tried to tell him to get over it, and you know, that things would get sorted and all that. And but he was very, very crestfallen. And the third week he started complaining about everything, about the hospital not taking good care of him, the drugs not being given properly, the doctors not coming to see him frequently, and so on. And the Sevadals again did whatever they can. They cannot really interfere much with the way hospital treats its patients, but they did whatever they can. And before they left, they gave him Bhagwan's vibhuti. And they prayed for him, and they said they will continue to pray for him, and that everything would be all right. So they did whatever was within their means and within their ambit to keep his spirits up. So this is what happened in the third week. And Professor Sudhir Bhaskar says, when he returned in the fourth week, he saw that the whole scene had changed. This young man was now very cheerful, and his brother and his sister-in-law did not have the gloom over their faces. So he thought maybe something worked, maybe their prayers worked, maybe the doctors did something, or maybe there's something that has happened which has made this family happy. But because physically his condition was the same, medically his condition had not improved, but there was some change in his outlook. So he went near and he asked him, "What happened? How you are so happy today? It's very good to see you like this. Tell me what happened." And then this young man said, "Just look at the bed beside me. Look at my neighbor." And Professor Sudhir Bhaskar saw that there was a baby there. And he found out that the baby was admitted just a few days ago. And the baby was less than 12 weeks old. And the baby was having a traction in the right leg. The baby had had a hip dislocation. And in medical terminology, when they put a traction, they put a rod through the bone and then a pulley. And at the end of the pulley is a weight. And they put this weight so that the bone is stressed and it comes back to position. And Professor Sudhir Bhaskar saw that at the end of this weight, what they had placed was 16 bricks. 16 bricks of weight for this 12 weeks old baby. His heart just went out for that baby. And he wanted to know more, how did this happen? And he asked the mother, and she said that one day she was on the ground, you know, on the kitchen floor, and she was cooking. The baby was there on her lap, and when she bent over to lift the vessels, because, you know, something was spilling over onto the stove, and as she bent over, this baby who was on the lap toppled, and the gap between the mother's lap and the earth is very less, about 4 to 6 inches, but for some strange reason the baby had a dislocation. Generally nothing would happen, even if the baby falls, you know, from a 1 or 2 feet high, also nothing would generally happen. But it is very unfortunate that this baby suffered a hip dislocation. So this distressed mother had gone from pillar to post trying to find a cure, and finally landed up in this hospital. And when this baby came, the brother of this young man and this young man, they saw the baby, and then they thought, well, what wrong could this baby have done to face this torture. And it was not only the baby suffering, everyone was suffering, the mother was suffering, and that whole family was suffering. And they thought, we are all the time questioning that, you know, what wrong have I done in my 20 years to experience this, but what wrong could this baby have done? And so then they realized that, you know, it is all something to do, which is coming to us from our earlier lives. But the most interesting thing is they saw that this baby, in spite of being this big weight fitted onto his body, the baby was smiling. It was in fact moving his limbs and it was cheerful. With whatever little energy it had and whatever movement it had, it was all the time happy. And then it occurred to them, if this baby is not complaining, who are we to complain? If this baby can bear it with a smile, why can't we? It only made them bear their pain with much more ease. And that changed their perspective so much that all the sorrow had disappeared from their lives. And the next week, when Professor Sudhir Bhaskar came to see this young man, guess what? This young man was not there anymore. He had been discharged. He was completely healed of that wound. This is what happens when we learn to take everything with a smile. The whole universe cooperates with us. You smile and smiles come back. Miles of smiles come back. In fact, today I read something very interesting. A famous writer was in his study room. He picked up his pen and he started writing. The first sentence he wrote is, last year I had a surgery and my gallbladder was removed. I had to stay stuck to the bed due to the surgery for a long time. This was the first sentence. And then, second sentence. The same year, I reached the age of 60 and I had to give up my favorite job. I had spent 30 years of my life in this publishing company. This is what he wrote, the second sentence. And the third sentence, the same year I experienced the sorrow of the death of my father. He went on, fourth sentence, and in the same year my son failed in his medical exam because he had a car accident. He had to stay in bed at the hospital with the cast on for several days. The destruction of car was another loss. And finally, this writer wrote, alas, it was such a bad year. So he wrote all these five sentences down, and then his wife entered the room. And she found her husband looking sad, lost in his thoughts. So from behind his back, she read what was written on the paper. And the wife then left the room silently. And she came back with another paper. And she placed it on sight of her husband's writing. And when this writer saw what his wife had written, he just could not but have a picture of peace in his mind and on his face. You know what his wife had written? For the first sentence, the old man, the first sentence he had written was, last year I had a surgery and my gallbladder was removed. I had to stay stuck to the bed due to the surgery for a long time. And below this, the wife had written, last year, I finally got rid of my gallbladder, due to which I had spent years in pain. This is how the wife put it. And the second sentence where the man had written, the same year I reached the age of 60 years and I had to give up my favorite job. I had spent 30 years of my life in this publishing company. The same sentence, you know how his wife had written? I turned 60 with sound health and got retired from my job. Now I can utilize my time to write something better with more focus and peace. The third sentence this man had written, the same year I experienced the sorrow of the death of my father. To this, the wife has changed. And she said, the same year, my father, at the age of 95, without depending on anyone or without any critical condition, met his creator. This is how his wife had changed this sentence. And the fourth sentence where the man had written, and in the same year my son failed in his medical exam because he had a car accident. He had to stay in bed at hospital with the cast on for several days. And I also lost the car. His wife had erased that line and written, the same year, God blessed my son with a new life. My car was destroyed, but my son stayed alive without getting any disability. And lastly, where the husband had written, alas, it was such a bad year, the wife changed it too. What an immense blessing of God it was. Last year passed very well. In daily lives, we must see that it's not happiness that makes us grateful, but gratefulness that makes us happy. It's not that when we are happy, we smile. We should smile so that we will be happy, so that we will continue to experience happiness. And once we begin to smile, once we begin to learn to be grateful, we will see miracles. Because once we learn to count our blessings, we will see that blessings will be showered on us, which are uncountable. Uncountable blessings will be showered upon us. In fact, Professor Sudhir Bhaskar said, this was one very important lesson that he learned from his experience in his life. And it only got vindicated because one day, Swami told him, please understand, once you surrender to me, I will never allow anything wrong to happen to you. Please take whatever happens as happenings for your own good. In fact, Professor Sudhir Bhaskar said, Swami once told him that even if by mistake, if you tell me I'm yours, that's enough. I will take care. Whatever happens to you, it will be for your good. Nothing wrong will ever happen to you. Because you said, I am yours. So this was the first lesson that he learned from Bhagwan, of acceptance, of gratitude. And how did he learn this? Because he went to serve. Everything begins with that sensitivity. Everything begins when we look at the world not through the eyes of our mind, but through the feelings of our heart. So this is what we discussed last time, and today I wish to move on from there. We will discuss a little more about this very important aspect of sensitivity and gratitude, and then we'll move on to what more lessons Professor Sudhir Bhaskar had the opportunity to learn serving at the lotus feet of Bhagwan, living in the physical proximity of Bhagwan. So this is what we have today in this last leg of Thursday Live, coming to you straight from the studios of Radio Sai.
Tune to Sai. Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned. So welcome to Outside Inside, Deep Inside. I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu. The time in the studios now is 9:03, and today in Outside Inside, Deep Inside, we have Learning with Love, anecdotes and insights from conversation with Professor Sudhir Bhaskar. So as I was just telling you, the first lesson that he learned was gratitude, and that gratitude, attitude of gratitude came because he went to serve. Everything begins with that spirit of service, the spirit of feeling for others, spirit of reaching out, of being sensitive. Just a few weeks ago, on January 9th, 2015, there was a very interesting item in a national newspaper in India. It was about an auto driver. His name is Abdul Hassan. Abdul Hassan was born to Haji Hassan and Bashar Babi. And this couple, they come from Nizamabad district in the state of Telangana, from a town called Armoor. In 1942, Abdul Hassan came into this world, and by the time he was 15 years old, Abdul developed an interest in social service. And he started reading about Mahatma Gandhi. In 1965, Abdul Hassan read about Mahatma Gandhi, and after that he turned a Gandhian. Then he completed his high school and he went to Mumbai as a mason. And later he went to Middle East, he went to Muscat, where he spent 8 years as a construction worker and a mason. He returned to India after that and he bought an auto rickshaw. And then he started eking out a living by driving the auto rickshaw. He also had a little of his income which came from rent. He had a little property. But what is special about this auto rickshaw driver is this. Abdul Hassan drives poor people, pregnant women, patients and pensioners free of cost in his auto. And he buries or cremates forlorn bodies with his own expenses. This is what he does. Not only this, he feeds at least 4 beggars at his home every day and as many as 20 poor persons during Ramzan, the month sacred to him. And every year he extends financial assistance of rupees 1,000 each to 10 poor students, and he also gives Pratibha awards to an equal number of meritorious students in high school. It doesn't end there. He collects clothes and distributes them among the poor and destitute. And he always keeps a petrol can in his auto, and he gives fuel to vehicle users free of cost if their vehicle breaks down on the road. And if he finds someone in need of water, he always also keeps water cans ready in his auto to provide drinking water to any passerby who might need, especially during summer. Another thing that he does, he fills pits and potholes on the road with metal and soil and removes obscene posters and hoardings. Besides all this, Abul Hasan goes around slums and teaches poor students even today. And you know what is his philosophy? He says, I believe that to serve people, you don't need a post. Anyone can serve. Anyone in any position can serve. And then he says, similarly, we need not be rich for philanthropy. What is needed is only a kind heart. Only the kind heart is enough. And you ask him, what is your religion? What do you feel about Islam? He says, every religion is good. There are only two religions in this world, peace and love. And there are only two dharmas, goodness and humanity. He says, this is what I believe in. Only two religions in the world, peace and love, and only two principles of right conduct, goodness and humanity. The article has the header, an auto driver with a heart of gold. In fact, Abul Hasan has garnered so much praise from the people, so much love from people around, that today people call him Armoor Gandhi. Armoor is the town from which he came. He's called the Armoor Gandhi because he drives poor people, he drives pregnant women, he drives patients and pensioners free of cost in his auto. Interestingly, his late parents were also social workers, and his only son, Ahmad Hussein, who lives in Saudi Arabia, also works as a driver cum carpenter, and he's also following in the footsteps of his grandfather and his father. There are so many such beautiful stories of people who have, as the article says, heart of gold. And everything begins from here. Everything begins from this little ripples that few people create. We can never underestimate the cascading effect of one good deed. They say the measure of a life is not its duration, but its donation. Mother Teresa said that kind words can be short and easy to speak, but that echoes are endless. Echoes are truly endless. I remember a very beautiful thing that the great saint and literator Rabindranath Tagore said, he who wants to do good knocks at the gate, but he who loves finds the gate open. There are so many people who have good intentions. All these people who have good intentions, Rabindranath Tagore says, it's nice, but they are only knocking at the gate. But if someone really loves, if he genuinely loves, he will see, he doesn't have to knock at the gate, he will find the gates open. Because there are so many opportunities, and because the universe will wrap itself around that person to make that good intention coming out of genuine love to materialize. And genuine love is always accompanied with sacrifice. Love without sacrifice is meaningless. And sacrifice without love is impossible. So this was one very powerful lesson that we gather from what Professor Sudhir Bhaskar said last time. This immense virtue of sensitivity, and which is so much in need today. And the subsequent lesson that we learned was of gratitude. They say if you want to feel rich, just count all the things you have that money cannot buy. We all the time see the things that others have or the things that money can buy, and we feel that we have less. But if we have to just look around and see all the things that we have in our life that money cannot buy, we will know how rich we are. Every day may not be good, but there is something good in every day. There is something good in every day. So, these are some of the very beautiful lessons that we have gathered listening to Professor Sudhir Bhaskar the previous Thursday, the previous episode of Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. And today, I want to move on and we will listen to another lesson that he learned at Bhagwan's Lotus Feet. And before we move on, for those who are not familiar with Professor Sudhir Bhaskar, he was the director of Prashant Nilam Campus, Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning. Earlier, he was the Dean of the Department of Management Studies here in Prashant Nilam. He has more than 3 decades of teaching, research and consulting experience in the areas of quality management, re-engineering, marketing, complex problem solving, corporate social responsibility, rural development and so on. After his bachelor's in engineering in Regional Engineering College, Warangal, which is now called NIT College, he did his master's in technology from the prestigious IIT, Indian Institute of Technology, Chennai, and he topped it with a fellowship in management, which is equivalent to PhD from IIM, Bangalore, Indian Institute of Management. So he has his degrees from 2 premier institutions of the country. And he joined Bhagwan's University in 1988. Before that, he worked in TCS, Tata Consultancy Services, for 6 years. And TCS, as many of you would know, is one of India's leading companies in IT and IT services. And of course, plenty of awards and accolades have come his way. But what is really special about Professor Sudhir Bhaskar is that exceptional relationship that he had with Bhagwan. He had the opportunity to serve Bhagwan at a very close, at very close quarters, and that is how he had the chance to witness and experience how the divine works and experience the love of Bhagwan and watch him at very, very close quarters and learn from his life. And what we've been doing in this series is trying to gather what he has learned working under the direct supervision of Bhagwan, because he was also instrumental in executing many projects, especially the Gram Seva project that the boys do every year. He was someone who was very active and who led from the front, organizing this mammoth project for the boys every year. So he's had decades of living with the Lord, and living with Lord, as they say, is true education. So today, let's go on and listen to another excerpt of this conversation with Professor Sudhir Bhaskar. Absolutely. Whatever you experience in life, once you have come to him, once you have surrendered to him, know that it is
for that
you.
Surrender is not people wait till telling, say, no, Swami, I'll do whatever you say. That is not, I'm not talking to this surrender. The surrender which I gave the thing, even out of mistake, in my mind, in a dream, I slipped and told the Swami, I am yours and you are mine.
That's it.
That is surrender. That aspect you are able to hold, that is the end of it. And you will not let
God is
go.
Just waiting to...
For you to make that slip. Let us put it that way.
Well, I mean, no limit to the compassion, that's why.
That's why, when you say Swami has 1,000 mothers, that's what it really means, isn't it? Okay, I'd like to go on to another one.
Sure, sir, please.
This happened in Kodaikanal in one of our visits to with Swami. There was a student who passed out with MSc Chemistry from the institute, and he was working in Mysore, in that Central Food Technology Research Institute labs which is there. And all of us know, and many others who have heard would know, that now seeing Swami in Kodaikanal, or experiencing Swami in Kodaikanal, or being part of the entourage of Swami in Kodaikanal, is something which is beyond description.
A lifetime opportunity.
Not a life. I mean, I don't know how many births. How many births, no. Let us say, I've come to every avatar of Swami, let us say. But in every avatar, did he take me to some place to give me this experience? I'm not sure. So, that is the thing. All the old students who did not have an opportunity to go with Swami, they all tried to come. So, this boy also had come. And, you know, these places don't pay very much. So, whatever money he was able to save, he brought the money and stayed. And when Swami is there, Kodaikanal is very expensive. So, money was almost getting over, whatever he brought. Maybe one more day he could stay and go back. So, previous day, he was holding a letter in Swami. Swami did not take the letter. Then Swami called him to come to Saraswati inside, along with the other boys. And now Swami was talking. Then called the boy and said, whatever Swami would have got letters during darshan were kept on a table stool by the side of him, in the charpai.
Yes.
Swami called him and said, from this stack of letters, take any one letter. Pull out one letter. So the boy, you know, looked at and pulled out one letter. And then Swami said, open that letter. So he opened the one edge. Then Swami said, take out what is inside. So he put his finger inside, two fingers, and pulled out. And from there inside came a 500 rupee note. Then Swami looked at him and said, this is what you asked for, isn't it? You wanted 500 rupees so that you could stay for a few more days. Take it.
You had witness to this.
And he was so very happy. The boy was happy. It didn't stop there. See, Swami always uses an opportunity to give a lesson for us to learn for the rest of our life. Then Swami said, you asked for 500, I gave 500. But suppose you would have asked me, Swami, I want to stay. Please take care of me. I would have given all the money which is needed for you to stay here.
Wow. He said that.
Just couple it with what I told in the previous. We should allow him to decide what should be bestowed on us. We should not seek what we want.
Because many times we do not know what is good for us.
And that's why in Telugu Swami says, no, adigina kolladi aduguna padunnadi. That means the more you ask, it goes in the bottom of the tray. But you just hold your hands together and pray, Swami, please take care.
You know what is best.
The best way he could think of, no, which could be even beyond your imagination.
Absolutely.
Or your comprehension, what you would have thought about, all that he would have done for you. So that day I realized, never ask.
Never ask. Just trust him.
Just say, thank you, Swami. Please take care. Only thing which you should pray, Swami, please take care. How best or what should be, it will be up to him. We leave it to him. Like I said, he cannot do something which is not appropriate for us.
Absolutely.
He can only do what is best for us.
I always feel that you cannot have a better well-wisher for you than God.
Then we can think about ourselves also. So that's one thing, you know, which was very
amazing, sir.
Thing which got stuck in my mind. So many times when boys and others or devotees come and ask, I say, just say, Swami, please take care. That is enough. That one sentence is enough. You don't need to give a big list. Swami, this health problem is there, this job problem is there, this friend problem is there, this money problem is there. You don't give any checklist. You just say, Swami, please take care. He knows how best to take care of you. So that's one thing is, you know, I feel it, which is applicable for anybody.
Very important life.
Anybody, it is applicable.
So this is one powerful lesson that Professor Sudhir Bhaskar shared. It is all about leaving it to him. It's about submitting your tiny will at the feet of the mighty omni will. I'm reminded of a little story that I heard some time ago. There was this mother who went to a shop with her child, and as the mother was doing her purchases, she told the child, kid, pick up how many ever toffees you want from the jar and I'll pay for it. And the child said, no, mother. She said, no, it's okay, you pick up. Take the toffees, as many as you want. And the boy said, It's okay, mother. No, it's fine. It's fine, mom. The mother said, fine. And so mother finished her purchases. And then, as they were about to leave, this boy told the shopkeeper, can you give me toffees? And the mother said, what? This is what I have been telling you from all the while. I'm asking you to take toffees. Why can't you take it with your own hand? And then the boy says, mom, I don't want to take toffees with my hand. I will get so little. I will get only a few. I want the shopkeeper to give me because he has big hands. Because I will get more. I want shopkeeper to give me the toffees. That is how, if you learn to say, God, that you know best. My hand is tiny. I don't know what to ask. I don't know what is good for me. If you leave everything to God, then we would be showered with much, much more than we can even collect in our heart. As they say, those who leave everything in God's hand will eventually see God's hand in everything. Isn't that beautiful? If we learn to leave everything in God's hand, we will see God's hand in everything. Somebody sent me a beautiful prayer of surrender, and it goes like this. Dear Father, I come before you with focused heart. How can I begin to express my gratitude for your great love for me? The depths of your love are so wide and so deep and so long that I can only attempt to understand the vastness. While my mind cannot comprehend your greatness in entirety, my heart's desire is to follow your lead. Every step and every corner, I surrender to your plan, no matter where it leads. While I haven't always been so willing, I'm renewing my vows to you, Lord. I beg you to take me and use me as only you can. No matter the time or place, it truly is my joy to say, your will, your way. This is the prayer of surrender. When we can at every moment say to the Lord, Lord, I beg you to take me and use me as only you can, no matter the time or place. And it is only my joy that I follow your will and your way. So surrender begins with submitting our tiny will at the feet of that mighty omni-will. And I would say the next step in surrender is staying calm and being still, no matter how deep the valley or steep the hill. We have to accept everything with calmness, with stillness, because we have surrendered. I remember an incident from the life of Professor Kasturi. Professor Kasturi was someone who always was very passionate about talking to devotees. He would never miss an opportunity to share about Bhagwan's love, especially with foreign groups, because he was very good articulator. So people from different countries, when they would come to Prashantinilayam, they would ask him to spend some time with them, and he would do that very gladly, and most occasions he would take Bhagwan's permission and do it. So one day, when he returned home after a lecture to foreign devotees, his daughter, Padma Kasturi, she was wild. She said, "What, father, what is this? You go and talk for hours and hours about Bhagwan and how Swami helped this person or how Swami rescued that person. But what has Swami done for you? What has Swami done for you?" Because their life was going through so much of turmoil. Professor Kasturi's wife was bedridden. She was paralyzed for decades. And his daughter, Padma Kasturi, she had had not a good marriage. Her husband was not with her. So the wife is sick. His daughter is in trauma after a failed marriage. And he has lost both his sons who were brilliant, and not lost them when they were little ones. He had lost them when they were able to take on life, when one was a teenager and the other had almost was at the height of his professional career. He had lost his sons, and he had a deceased wife, and he had a daughter who was clueless. So Padma Kasturi, she was so distressed and so wild with what his father was doing. He said, "What is the use of your going and talking to all these foreign devotees when for 11 years your wife has been on the bed, paralyzed? And look at my marital problems." So she just actually burst out in a rage at her father. And Professor Kasturi, he listened calmly. And you know what he said? "Padma, it is okay for you to talk in this vein. But I don't want Swami to do anything for me or my family. Whatever Swami does, He's perfect. He's God. I have that faith in Him. Whomever He does it to, I consider them as my own. Whomever Swami blesses, I consider them as my own kith and kin. I don't have any attachment with you or my wife and family. From your point of view, what you're saying may be appreciable, but I do not have the feeling at all that Swami must do some miracle only for me and my family and my people. Whomever He does, whatever He does, I consider them as my own, and He's perfect. Whatever He does, it is for my good." So he would never be rattled. And Professor Kasturi was someone, anyone who has seen him only remembers him as a person who always was spreading cheerfulness, who always was cracking jokes, who always was making Swami laugh, who always was someone who was bursting with humor. But no one knew what he was going through inside, but he never allowed that to touch him because he had surrendered everything to the Lord. There is this famous story of Arthur Ashe, who was the first African-American tennis player, who in his career played the international sport at the highest level of the game. He won 3 Grand Slam titles in 1968, 1970 and 1975. Unfortunately, after that, destiny drew him into the jaws of death, and that happened in a very strange way. He first underwent a heart surgery in 1982, followed by a brain operation in 1988. And after that, he was found infected with HIV virus. And this was because of a blood transfusion. And his family members and several of his fans all over the world, they were deeply pained. And so many letters came to him, and one of the letters said, "Dear Arthur, why did God have to choose you to suffer this deadly disease? Because he was someone who did a lot of philanthropy also, and someone who played such great tennis. And being afflicted with this fatal disease, and for no fault of his." Someone asked him, "Why did God have to choose you to suffer this deadly disease?" You know what Arthur said? He said, "Every year, 50 million children start playing tennis all over the world. And of the 50 million children who play tennis, 50 lakh get to learn to play good tennis. And of the 50 lakh who learn to play good tennis, among them 500,000 learn to play professional tennis. And of the 500,000 who learn to play professional tennis, 50,000 somehow manage to reach the circuit. And of the 50,000 who manage to reach the tennis circuit, 5,000 reach the Grand Slam. Of the 5,000 who reach the Grand Slam, 50 reach the Wimbledon. Of the 50 who reach Wimbledon, 4 reach semifinals. And only 2 reach the finals." And he says, "On that day, when I won the finals, when I held the Wimbledon cup with my hand, I was so delighted and ecstatic, I did not pause to ask God, 'God, why me?' And he says, "In that case, now when I am in pain, I have no right to ask God, 'Why me?'" With this sense of equanimity, he took whatever came to him in his life, and he was always cheerful. In fact, I'm reminded of Mr. Ratan Tata, the chairman of so many Tata Group companies. He's part of the Tata Sons group. He said on one occasion, "Ups and downs are very important to keep us going. A straight line, even in an ECG machine, means that we are not alive. If it is a straight line, especially if you have seen an ECG graph of the heart, if it is a straight line, it means that we are not alive. So if there are ups and downs, that means we are alive. That means there is life." So surrender is staying calm and being still. Whether we are in a valley or we are in the hill. I would say this is the second step in surrender. And then, in the third step of surrender, we serve as per the will of the divine. Surrender is serving as per his will. And you serve as his channel and as his medium and as his people. Once you have that equanimity, once you are at that level, when you are very calm, then you become his channel. When you become an instrument of the divine, you become like Hanuman. I remember, if you look at the life of Hanuman, Bhagwan used to so fondly refer to this sterling virtues that Hanuman embodies. When Hanuman crossed the ocean and he went over to Lanka, and when Ravana asked him, "Who are you?" Bhagwan always says how Hanuman did not say that, "I am the valorous one who crossed this mighty ocean and who have come to throw the challenge from Rama. I am the valorous one who killed your son and who destroyed the Ashoka forest." He did not say any of these. Hanuman said, "Dasoham Kaushalendrasya." He said, "I am only a servant of Lord Rama." Every time, even when he came back after locating Mother Sita and returned to Rama carrying the Chudamani that Mother Sita had given, when Rama asked Hanuman, "How were you able to do this? How were you able to jump the ocean and cross over and come back so successfully?" And Hanuman only said, "Rama, it is so simple. I was able to do it because you gave me your ring. I was chanting your name and I had your ring with me. That is the reason why I could cross. And I could come back only because I had the darshan of the mother and the mother gave the Chudamani. I came back because I always had only you in my mind." Even when Mother Sita asked Hanuman, when she saw her for the first time, "Hanuman, how were you able to come to this forest? There are demons everywhere. How were you able to get past Lankini, who is the demoness guarding Lanka? How were you able to manage to come to this very strictly guarded forest?" And Hanuman at that time did not tell Mother, "Mother, you have no clue. Don't think I am a monkey. Don't think that, you know, I am someone with little strength. Do not get deluded that I am a monkey. You know what, I can do all this. You know what, I can actually become big. I can do this. I have actually destroyed the son of Ravana." He did not tell any of that. He only said, "Mother, you have no clue. Whatever I have done it because I have been constantly chanting the name of Rama." Rama chose me as an instrument, and whatever I have achieved, it is only because Rama is working through me. That sense of surrender was all the time so overpoweringly there in his personality. And Bhagwan at every opportunity told the students how Hanuman is an ideal when it comes to being a devotee of the Lord, a servant of the Lord. And when someone asked Hanuman, "Who are you?" When Rama himself asked, then he said, "Rama, at the level of the body, I am a servant of yours. I am a servant. At the level of the mind, I am a messenger. But at the level of the Atma, at the level of the spirit, I and you are one. When you are all the time connected, then there is nothing like your will. It's always His will. And that is where surrender finally leads one to. Surrender is ending oneself completely, subsumed by His love. When we end our ego completely, our ego totally gets annihilated and subsumed in the cosmic person. That is the final stage of surrender. There is that beautiful incident where when Krishna comes at the last moments of Radha to give darshan to Radha, and Krishna is excited and says, "Radha, I have come, Radha, I have come." And Radha is seemingly not so fascinated. And Krishna says, "Radha, I have come, don't you realize?" And then Radha says, "Krishna, what is this? What? Why are you saying, I have come, I have come? When were you not there that you have come?" And he takes Krishna's hand and he says, "Krishna, look at the waves of the water. Can you not see your reflection in that? Krishna, look at this blade of grass. Can you not see your beautiful face in that? Can Krishna, can you not feel your flute in this breeze? Krishna, can you not feel your music in this bamboo reeds? Krishna, where you were not there that you are saying you have come?" And then Krishna actually bends and says, "Krishna, Radha, tell me, what do you want? I have not seen a devotee like this. Tell me, whatever you want, I will give you." And Radha says, "I don't want anything." Krishna says, "You know what? I can give you anything you want. I'm the Lord of the universe. Anything you want, I will give you." And Radha says, "Nothing, Krishna. I don't want anything." And then Krishna says, "Don't you want even my love? Radha, you are not even asking for my love." Then Radha says, "Krishna, I know that I love you. I know that you are mine and that you will always be mine. You are eternally mine. It does not matter if you love me or not. I know that I love you. That is enough for me." That is ending oneself completely, subsumed in the divine. Where one does not exist as an individual. That is the final state of surrender. I am reminded of that beautiful message that Bhagwan gave to Charles Penn, the devotee, one of the very earliest devotees who came to Bhagwan from the West. And in that, Swami says, "Your mission has begun." That's how it starts. And there Swami says, "My mission has now reached that point in time when each of you now has work to do. This planet has a purpose in the great galaxy in which it is held. That purpose is now unfolding before our eyes." And Swami goes on to say, "I call upon you to radiate the bhakti, the devotion within you, so that its unseen power will envelop all who come into your orbit." And then Bhagwan says, "How can we do this? To successfully perform your part, always remain centered upon me. Allow yourself to impart that purity of heart within you towards all human beings and all living creatures, and do not reach for the fruits of your work. You are my instruments from whom my love will pour. Be always aware that the moment you let your ego descend upon you, my work ceases. if you let your ego descend upon you, my work ceases. When you have overcome your negative mindedness, you will again become my source. You are my instruments from whom my love will pour. But Swami is so clear in this message where he says, you have to let your ego go. Because once you let your ego come, then my work ceases. We lose that connection. And surrender is all about completely submitting to that omni-will. Just like that person, that boy, who asked for 500 rupees, and that's what Swami gave him. As Prophet Sudhir Bhaskar said, if only he had told Bhagavan, Swami, I just want to be with you, then he could have stayed for many more days in Kodaikanal, and maybe even after that, Swami would have made that arrangement. So that is that beautiful aspect that we learn. And these are powerful life lessons that the Divine Master teaches us. And those of us who have had the opportunity to actually live with Bhagwan and experience this firsthand, you know, these memories are indelible memories. And this chance happens only when the avatar comes in flesh and blood. And so it is our opportunity to listen to these whenever we can hear from people who have experienced it directly, and then take them into our lives and translate them into our lives so that our lives become his message. There are many more lessons like this that Professor Sudhir Bhaskar shared, and we will continue this in the coming episodes of Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. Dear listeners, please feel free to send us your feedback on this program. As always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu. And as the clock marches on, it's 9:50 and it's time to move on and bring to an end this day-long Thursday live coming to you straight from the studios of Radio Sai. As I sign off, you will continue to listen to a drama presented by devotees from the United States. It's entitled United Sai America. This was presented in front of Bhagwan on 30th July 2009. So you will listen to this beautiful presentation now. Thank you so much for being with us all through the day. It's really heartening to be here in Prashantalam, in this spiritual epicenter of the world, and share his love, his message, and learn to live his message in our lives. Thank you so much. With all our love, Sai Ram, and a happy and godly good night from Prashantinilam. Sai Ram.